Chapter 69, Sing. Nix stared blankly at the director. Surely she wasn't serious. Phoenix Wack playing the lead? The thought sent Nix into alternating fits of giddiness and panic.
Well, Mrs. Finkbone asked, will you be Dorothy, at least for tonight, until we can figure out some other solution?
Nix closed her eyes. Part of her wanted to try, but most of her screamed this would end worse than Match and Mirror. It seemed like shoving her in as a last-minute substitute would only prolong the inevitable. If they were going to fail, wouldn't it be better to simply accept defeat and save everyone further humiliation? But then she opened her eyes. They were watching her. All of them. The director, the cast, the crew, all staring. And although being stared at wasn't new for Nix, this time, instead of ridicule, those faces contained hope. Whatever the audience thought about the play, however much embarrassment still awaited them, none of these things mattered as much as this. She had friends, and they needed her. Nix swallowed and nodded once.
I'll do my best.
Mrs. Finkbone immediately began issuing orders, sending students scurrying all over for makeup and costumes. They soon discovered that changing roles mid-musical presented a few problems. The biggest was that Fawn's wetsuit wouldn't have fit Nix as an 8-year-old. And what would the audience think when Dorothy suddenly put on 100 pounds? Mrs. Finkbone would definitely have to make some announcement beforehand so they didn't burst out laughing when she walked on stage. The issue of her face was a little more concerning. Even after rubbing it raw with a soapy towel, portions of the purple eyeshadow still remained. The makeup crew did their best to make her presentable, but Nix couldn't help remembering how stunning Fawn had looked as Dorothy. The contrast was comical. Maybe the crowd would think this was a big joke. When Nix saw the silver leotard the props coordinator had found her, she almost backed out completely. The stretchy fabric would accent her spare tire like a neon sign and emphasize every unsightly bulge. She tried to protest. She could just wear her Plankton Queen costume. But Mrs. Finkbone said the audience would be too far away to see much. Nix still might have lost her nerve, but at that moment, Tiago approached, wearing his oversized piranha teeth around his neck.
You'll be a much better Dorothy than Fawn.
Nix's knees wobbled.
At least Fawn doesn't look like a walrus in her costume.
He was so close, his smell encased her. She wanted so badly to please him. But when he saw her in spandex, he'd lose any respect he might have had for her. Tiago wrinkled his eyebrows.
You don't have to be thin to be pretty.
Nix's heart exploded, filling her entire body with joy. It was such a simple sentence made up with everyday, normal-sounding words. But put in that particular order and delivered by the perfect set of lips, the phrase worked some sort of magic inside her. She fairly floated to the dressing room to change. Beryl had started the intermission music for the third time when Mrs. Finkbone finally stepped onto the stage to address the restless crowd. The piano stopped and sighs of relief rose up from the darkened theater.
Ladies and gentlemen, we apologize for the wait. You may have noticed that one of our cast members is unable to continue. As a result, we've had to make a few changes. For the remainder of the production, the role of Dorothy will be played by Nix Wack. Once again, thank you for supporting the WCHS Arts Program.
The director practically flew off the stage. From the look on her face as she escaped, she was questioning the sanity of trying to salvage the play at this point. The talking sub hesitantly made his way back on stage, followed by the cowardly lionfish.
With a whispered, "Good luck,"
Jordan used his crutch to push Nix out under the lights. Somehow the stage seemed different than when she'd been out as the Plankton Queen. It had certainly grown larger, the lights brighter and hotter. In fact, no sooner had Nix stepped out in front of the audience than panic closed her throat nearly to the point of strangulation. Jordan hobbled along next to her, chanting his lines. With another wave of panic, Nix realized she couldn't remember Dorothy's opening line. That was strange. She'd known it 2 minutes ago. With every step toward center stage, her desperation grew. She resisted the impulse to cover herself with her hands. Somewhere in the back of her mind, Nyx registered the crowd had grown noisy, but she couldn't process what that might mean. What was that stupid line? Maybe Jordan would know it, or even one of the other cast members. They could whisper it to her just to get her started. Then Nyx saw what the audience was chattering about. One of the lionfish's spiky fins had caught on the microphone cord as he walked to the far end of the stage. The mic stand started to tip. Nyx rushed to grab it, but too late. With a deafening blare of feedback, the microphone crashed onto the stage. Then, as if in slow motion, it rolled off and disappeared into the darkness of the auditorium floor, dragging half the lionfish's costume down after it. The audience burst out laughing. About that time, the boy playing the lionfish realized his entire right side had been exposed. Jordan mercifully stepped in front of the mortified child, hiding his brilliant white briefs from the general public. "The rest of you stay where you are," Mrs. Finkbone hissed as Jordan and the lionfish hurried off stage. "We'll have this fixed in a minute." She sent Sarah to retrieve the damaged costume, and one of the sound techs began untangling the cords. Nyx actually felt a little relieved. At least now she had a few more minutes to remember her opening line. Maybe the sub knew. But before she could whisper her question, the talking sub hopped off the stage to help the sound tech. Nyx stood frozen, smack dab in the middle of the stage, alone and awkward. The audience's laughter died quickly, leaving only the sounds of the crew trying to get the mic back online. From the agitation in their voices, it wasn't going well. One of them grabbed the other mic stand and pulled it down into their mess of equipment. They seemed to be switching microphones with cords, trying to figure out the problem. At a shouted request, the house lights came on, destroying the magical atmosphere of the stage lights. After so much waiting already, the crowd didn't have patience for this delay. They grew loud and boisterous. Several people got up to leave. Sweat drenched Nyx's face and various other parts of her body. Hopefully, the makeup would hide the red blotches she felt blossoming on her forehead. She still couldn't recall how the second act started, but it looked as if it wouldn't matter anyway. More impatient spectators headed for the glowing red exit signs. Nyx's eyes welled with tears. After so much work, how could it end in such disaster? She'd failed her friends when they'd, at that precise moment, something interrupted her thoughts. A single word as clear as if a bell had chimed in her head. A familiar word that brought back memories of slick mud walls and sodden jeans. Sing. Nyx paused, momentarily forgetting the mutinous crowd below. Sing? Sing what? There were no solos in the second act. And anyway, Mrs. Finkbone said fixing the costume would only take a minute. On the other hand, the text didn't look any closer to having the mics working. And a good portion of the audience had already gotten up to leave. Nyx had to do something. Surely her singing a solo wouldn't impress anyone, but it might distract them long enough to stay in their seats a few more minutes. Nyx glanced around for a working microphone, but it seemed all three were now undergoing surgery at the foot of the stage. "Sorry this is taking so long," Nyx said above the chatter of the theater. No one seemed to hear. If anything, the noise level increased. Nyx was going to have to be a little more assertive. If she'd been in this position at the beginning of the semester, she would have run for the exit, but she was a completely different person now. She could handle assertive. "While we're waiting for the lionfish to get his fins reattached, I have an idea." This time Nyx yelled and the crowd quieted a little. A few offstage cast members watched her with large eyes. "We all know Dorothy isn't typically portrayed as a fat girl in tights." To Nyx's extreme relief, a few people chuckled. "Well, playing this part came as quite a surprise to me, too, and I'm having a little trouble getting comfortable with it." The talking sub stopped fiddling with the cords to stare quizzically at Nyx. The auditorium was still abuzz with talk, but at least no one else was sneaking toward the doors. "If you'll let me, there's one thing that might help me get into character. Beryl, can we run through the opening song?" Beryl appeared at the piano and shuffled music as if she'd been expecting this all along. The introduction began. Nyx realized she didn't know the words to the undersea version. Fawn had always rehearsed the solo on her own. Maybe no one would notice.
Determined not to miss her cue again, Nyx listened carefully to the opening bars. A couple measures to go. Remember what Mrs. Zerby said about breathing. She'd need all the power she could get without a mic. Nyx put a hand on her belly and breathed in, not caring how silly she looked. Her belly grew to the size of an August watermelon. She forced her breath out and it shrank. Beryl slowed slightly, and Nyx knew her time had come.
Somewhere over the rainbow.
Nyx's whole frame shook as the words poured out of her. She was pushing her diaphragm to the limit.
Way up high.
She noted with relief that the lionfish costume had been restored.
There's a land that I heard of once. In a lullaby.
She should be plenty loud. She couldn't even hear the piano anymore. After a few more bars, she finally worked up the courage to look down at the audience. She nearly choked. The eyes of every last person in the theater were fixed on her, as if she was strapped to a bomb. Not one of them so much as twitched. If it hadn't been for a random moth flying around the lights, Nyx would have sworn time had stopped completely. Was she that horrible? Had she shocked everyone into silence with her ghastly voice? Nyx glanced off stage to see if Finkbone wanted to start the second act without mics. 20 pairs of eyes stared back at her, practically unblinking. Should she stop? In front of the stage, the sound crew had completely halted working and were watching the stage with vacant expressions. Well, as long as Finkbone wasn't waving for her to shut up, she might as well finish the song. 3/4 of the way through, Nyx realized Beryl had actually stopped playing. Maybe she was confused by the wrong lyrics. When the last note ended, the theater fell into a profound silence. Nyx felt like the biggest fool in Pennsylvania. Who just starts singing a solo in public for no reason? She must look like the dumbest.
Sing it again!
The voice came from the back of the theater. A short man stood in the doorway as if he'd just come in from outside.
I missed some of it!
Laughter, then scattered applause. After a moment, everyone joined in. Nyx hoped this wasn't one of those clap for the awkward girl for finishing the race last kind of things. A few others called for an encore, but by that time, the newly repaired lionfish and the rest of the actors were making their way back to their places on stage. Jordan stared at her with the same look of awe he wore after she told him she had superpowers.
Did you seriously just sing Fawn's solo in front of all these people?
He asked with a smirk.
You do realize, he continued, his metal grin widening. You'll probably be arrested for copyright infringement, using the original lyrics like that.
The sound techs replaced two of the mics, apparently giving up on the third. Nyx's neck grew warm. The people were restless, she whispered. From the side, Mrs. Finkbone signaled them to start the scene. Jordan hobbled into position.
Nyxie, that was without a doubt the most wowza thing I've ever heard.
The house lights went out, once again hiding the spectators in a comforting black blanket. With a rush of relief, Nyx realized she knew her first line. She pointed toward the auditorium ceiling.
Look, urchin, the spires of the Pearl City. We made it.
All things considered, the second half of the musical went amazingly well. The one time Nyx wasn't sure of her line, Jordan pulled a Fawn and delivered it for her. And as Nyx expected, the plankton dancing line in the finale didn't seem to miss the queen. After the final curtain call, Mrs. Finkbone announced to the crew backstage, "Looks like we'll have to get a new wetsuit before tomorrow night." This was met with various cheers for Nyx and jibes toward the ex-Dorothy. Sarah raised her hand.
I was going to tell everyone tomorrow, but since we're all here, I got into the study abroad program. On Saturday morning, I fly to Spain.
Everyone seemed excited for Sarah, except maybe Tiago, whose smile looked pasted on. Poor guy would lose his girlfriend for a few months. Nyx was conflicted. While it would be nice to have Sarah out of the picture for obvious reasons, it meant Nyx would also be out of a friend. Although she and Sarah didn't hang out much, they did talk sometimes, and after all they'd been through together, they were pretty close. Would that change after Sarah got back? Nix took her turn in the hug line, even though Sarah wasn't leaving until the weekend. And Nix didn't even flinch when Sarah touched her shoulder blade love handles. The next half hour passed like a strange dream. People she'd never met approached to congratulate her on the success of the musical. Most complimented her on the solo. Several people asked if she'd had vocal training. She told them all the same thing. Just good advice from friends. One really good friend. She'd have to do something nice for Mrs. Zerby.
"Didn't know you could sing like that," Sergeant Frost towered over her. "Jordan said you might need a ride home."
Nix didn't know which statement to answer, so she smiled and nodded. On the way out to the patrol car, Beryl skipped up with her bag of music balanced on her head.
"I'm sorry about wrecking the accompaniment. I'm used to playing for fun. She holds notes out way past their count. I promise I won't barrel it up tomorrow."
"You did awesome," Nix said. "Do you need a ride home?" A panicked look crossed Jordan's face.
"Spankity spanks, but my parents are here."
Beryl skipped off toward the far parking lot, making farting noises with her mouth.
"Oh, and don't forget to learn the new words," she called behind her. "All that rainbow stuff didn't fit with the ocean theme."
Jordan balanced on one crutch and opened the car door for Nix. Before she could get in, however, Ms. Winkle appeared.
"Well done to both of you."
She thrust a folded paper into Nix's hands.
"See you in class."
Nix plopped into the plastic back seat and unfolded the note.
"Dear Nix, I make it a point not to inflate already enlarged heads. You, however, have one of the smallest egos I know of. I figured it wouldn't hurt to tell you honestly what I thought of your solo tonight. When you came on stage, I feared the worst. I was preparing what nasty comments I'd make to Vanessa, Mrs. Finkbone to you, about sticking a poor, inexperienced girl in the spotlight just to save her silly musical. Then you started your solo, and I suddenly felt sorry for Fawn, having to perform before you. I felt sorry for every person in town who wasn't there to hear it, and I felt angry at myself for doubting you. I wouldn't consider myself an expert on anything, much less music, but I can tell you how your song made me feel. The introduction was familiar, but when you began singing, it was as if I'd never heard the lyrics before. At first, I was surprised by the volume of your voice. How can such a huge sound come out of a 16-year-old? Then after listening for a few moments, I realized I was trembling. Why is this so incredible, I asked myself. I've heard plenty of people sing, and have enjoyed listening to much music. But this was the first time I'd ached for it to continue and dreaded the inevitable end. Nix, what you have is a gift. Don't ever doubt that you could do anything you wanted with your voice. Thank you for sharing your talent tonight. Your fan, D. Ms. Winkle during school hours."
Sergeant Frost started the car.
"Wasn't that the woman who lectured me on accusing minors of felonies?"
Jordan nodded.
"Ms. Winkle, we've got her for U.S. government and home ec."
He leaned toward Nix and said in a low voice,
"You notice she smelled like chemicals?"
"She did?"
"Yeah, like burnt plastic or something. It's got to be the chemotherapy."
Sergeant Frost cleared his throat as if he were feeling left out.
"Just be careful around her."
Nix and Jordan shared a confused look.
"Any particular reason?" Jordan asked.
Sergeant Frost sighed.
"I suppose it will get out eventually. You're right about her using cancer chemical treatment." "Wait," Jordan said. "How do you know anything about that?" "It doesn't leave this car," Sergeant Frost said. "But D. Winkle's name appeared in Eric Patterson's dealer notebook."
Nix scoffed. "There's no way."
"She was buying black market chemotherapy drugs. We charged her a few weeks ago. She pled guilty and paid a fine. I think she also got community service."
Nix's heart broke.
"Seriously? Why would she do that? I don't get it."
"I'm not the one who interviewed her," Sergeant Frost said as he shifted into gear. "But it sounds like she couldn't afford the treatment with the school's health insurance." "Stupid school board," Jordan said. "The part I can't understand," Sergeant Frost said, "is that the city actually apologized to Eric Patterson and his friends and dropped all charges as far as the assault on Dee."
Nix's mouth fell open. There were no words for how wrong that was. Before she could start in on the list of obscenities she had ready, Sergeant Frost added,
"Dee's own testimony corroborated their story that it was self-defense."
"Wait," Jordan said, "as in Eric and his thugs were only defending themselves from a 100-pound lady?"
"I don't know what to tell you guys," They reached a settlement.
Despite a strong urge to punch the bulletproof plastic, Nix took a deep breath and let it out. Ms. Winkle was a grown woman. If she wanted to lie to the cops to get kids out of trouble, it was her business.
Trying to save their souls, Nix mumbled as an afterthought.
Jordan nodded and even smiled a little.
That woman is something else.
Sergeant Frost pulled onto the road.
I just can't get over how much she looks like Alex.
Something occurred to Nix, something that couldn't wait.
Stop!
Sergeant Frost stopped, thankfully not as abruptly as Chuck.
I'm so sorry, but there's something I have to ask Ms. Winkle.
Jordan and his dad stared at Nix.
It's something about Alex. In fact, you both should come with me. Hurry before she leaves.
They found Ms. Winkle in the home ec classroom, underlining passages in her barbarian muscle man romance novel. She jumped when they entered and slid the book into her desk.
When I said see you in class, I meant tomorrow.
Thank you for the note, Nix said. It meant a lot.
Ms. Winkle smiled.
I'm proud to know you.
Are you Alex Abendroth's sister?
Ms. Winkle's expression went suspicious. Sergeant Frost gaped at Nix. Jordan took a half step behind his dad, as if to disavow his involvement in the interrogation. Nix grimaced.
It's just that Sergeant Frost was saying how much you looked like Alex, and I thought, why couldn't you be siblings? I mean, you're too old to be his daughter, right?
Sergeant Frost turned his gaze from Nix to Ms. Winkle.
I'm sorry. I don't think we've met formally. I'm Brett.
He watched Ms. Winkle's face, as if examining her features.
Deanna Winkle.
She paused, then gave Nix a little smile.
Yes, Sandy was my little brother.
Sandy?
Jordan asked. Apparently he was not ashamed to be there anymore.
It's a nickname for Alexander, believe it or not. I never understood it myself.
I knew it, Nix said. But your name?
Winkle is my married name. After I divorced, I decided I liked it better than Abendroth, especially with the town history.
Nix moved closer to the desk and lowered her voice.
So, do you know what happened to him? We think he might be trying to find his wife and son.
And maybe breaking into our friends' houses,
Jordan said apologetically. Ms. Winkle's expression cooled considerably.
Have a seat.
The three of them sat.
I don't know who's breaking into your friend's house, but I can tell you it's not my brother. You are right about him looking for his family.
Sergeant Frost cleared his throat.
Alex was a good friend of mine, and one of the best police officers this town has had. I was very sorry to see him go.
Ms. Winkle's eyes seemed to glisten, and she nodded.
He was a good man. And those rumors about him beating his wife and child were nonsense, started by Ken Yenchek.
Sergeant Frost's eyebrows furrowed.
Officer Yenchek? He skipped town even before Alex did. And I'd never heard him say anything about—
Ken and Orabel had an affair.
Ms. Winkle glanced at Nix and Jordan as if uncomfortable speaking of such topics around minors.
Impossible.
Now Ms. Winkle glared at Sergeant Frost.
I guess you and Sandy weren't as close as you thought.
Ken was old enough to be her father.
Or Quincy's father,
Ms. Winkle said.
There's no way. I can't believe he'd—
Apparently, Orabel was looking for a father figure. So much that she didn't seem to mind when Ken hit her and blamed it on Sandy.
Orabel was not—
Orabel took the abuse like a champ, as long as she could. Then she started taking it out on Quincy. And of course, she had the perfect scapegoat.
Sergeant Frost stood and bellowed.
I will not sit here and listen to you, badmouth.
Then leave!
All three of them froze for a moment. Nix had never seen Ms. Winkle like that. She sounded like a grizzly bear.
Dad, Jordan said, apologize.
Sergeant Frost swallowed, looked around the classroom as if someone might back him up, then sat.
It's just, they seemed like the perfect family.
Don't they all?
Ms. Winkle said.
Sandy effectively traded his reputation to protect his wife's. He accepted the blame for the bruises and even spent a few days in jail once. But eventually, he gave her an ultimatum. Have nothing more to do with Ken, or he would go to the police and tell them everything.
So she left,
Sergeant Frost said quietly.
And took Quincy. But Ken left 2 days earlier and tried to make it look like Sandy had something to do with his disappearance. Then Orabel snuck off in the middle of the night, leaving ID, passports, jewelry. That's what hurt Sandy the most. She was trying to make it look like he'd—
Ms. Winkle pulled a tissue out of her bag and blew her nose. Jordan waited a respectful moment, then asked,
Did he have any idea where they went?
Ms. Winkle shook her head.
But he spent every dollar he's ever earned trying to get his son back. I was just getting out of my own unhappy marriage, so I decided to relocate and keep an eye out for him. I figured they might come back to town sometime to see Oribel's mom. Or that maybe I'd hear helpful rumors circulating.
Oribel's mom lives in Woods Cross? Nix asked. Brett pointed at Ms. Winkle.
I hope you won't try to tell me Alex didn't have addiction problems. I tried to help him through that.
Ms. Winkle said. I wonder what could have been going on in Sandy's life that he felt he needed to deaden the pain somehow.
Sergeant Frost stared at the blank marker board.
I just wish he would have told me.
Well, I'm telling you now. Oribel's a hobag and my brother is innocent. Excuse my language. Anyway, I'd appreciate it if you kept this all to yourselves. Now, I hate to kick you out of my classroom since you seem so cozy, but my dog is probably eating the couch cushions by now.
Thank you, Nick said, for letting us know. Could we at least tell Sarah? I mean, what's the point of keeping it a secret now? Ms. Winkle cast a sulky look at Sergeant Frost.
I figured people might not react well to the news. Seems I was right. So no, although it might help Sarah sleep better at night, it would also cause quite a stir in town. If Oribel gets wind of it, she'll only hunker back down. I believe my anonymity increases the likelihood of finding information about my nephew. He's a good boy. I think when he's older, he'll make his way back here. Just keep an eye out for me, okay? Let me know if you see or hear anything.
Dude, Jordan said once they were back in the car, you've got to stop yelling at that lady. She gets under my skin. There's something not right about her. You mean because she doesn't automatically cower when Brett the police sergeant?
He trailed off under the baleful gaze of Brett the police sergeant. It's so sad, Nick said, that Ms. Winkle has to deal with all that plus the cancer.
Not to mention McGuckin, Jordan said. Sergeant Frost frowned. So is her hair always that big? You should have seen her on Halloween, Jordan said. We had to have class outside because her hair wouldn't fit through the door. I was waiting for a flock of sparrows to take up residence.
Sergeant Frost's laugh shook the car. Nick scowled at Jordan. How dare he make fun of her wig? Especially after they just learned that she was the Mother Teresa of civil litigation. I like her hair, Nick said.
Well, if you're going to change styles, Jordan said, at least wait until the show's over.
Jordan spent the rest of the ride teasing Nix's hair while she half-heartedly slapped him away. At first, Sergeant Frost seemed a little concerned to see his son styling hair in the back seat, but eventually he chuckled along with them. Then Sergeant Frost turned the corner into Nix's apartment parking lot, and the laughter died abruptly. What could only be described as a hick truck had just pulled away, and a small dark-haired man was carefully making his way up the icy front steps of the building. One hand held a lunchbox, the other a rifle case.
Looks like your dad's home, Sergeant Frost said.
Jordan gaped at Nix. It seems Patrick had been wrong after all. That was a relief, at least as far as Mrs. Wack was concerned. For some reason, Patty still liked the man. How had her father known where to find them? Maybe Mrs. Wack had left a note at the trailer or something.
He sure likes to hunt, Sergeant Frost said with a scowl. Funny, I've never seen him with any dead animals.
Nix shrugged. Come to think of it, neither had she. For someone that hunted 300 days of the year, you'd think he'd come home with meat or an animal skin once in a while.
If he weren't your dad, I'd have him investigated for poaching, Sergeant Frost said. At least I hope it's poaching he's been doing and not worse.
Worse? What would he be doing? Murdering people? Oh, that reminds me, Nick said. I saw a strange man sneaking backstage during the musical. Sergeant Frost made a face.
A strange man? Are you sure it wasn't a parent trying to congratulate his little Broadway star?
Nix was beginning to see where Jordan got his tact. The guy was watching the first act, hiding behind the fish tanks, so I don't think he was interested in the students. At least not their performance.
Definitely suspicious, Jordan said. You think it was Abendroth?
Sergeant Frost scoffed, but Nix ignored him. I don't think so. He looked nothing like Ms. Winkle. He did seem kind of familiar, though. No idea where I might have seen him. Sergeant Frost opened the door for Nix. She pulled her coat tightly around her and started up the steps. He called out something about stealing the show, but Nix wasn't really listening. She had just realized this was the first time her dad had come home since Mrs. Wack had lost her hair. Would he be mad? Nix thought seriously about waiting for Sergeant Frost to drive off so she could disappear into the woods, at least until Mac left on another trip. But the cruiser stubbornly sat there, no doubt waiting for Nix to get safely inside. As if she could be safe inside a trailer with an emotionally unstable woman and a potentially angry gun fanatic. Granted, her mother was much better than she had been. Verbal abuse was at an all-time low. but that didn't mean her temper would magically go away. And ever since Nix had told her she needn't be so careful, Mrs. Wack had slipped back into some of her old habits, mostly finding asinine chores for Nix to do and making veiled references to what Nix had put her through. At least, the apartment was no pets allowed, so she couldn't start catching cats again. In a quick change of plans, Nix rushed down the hallway to their door. Maybe if she hurried the confrontation, Sergeant Frost would still be around to hear the gunshots. She pushed the door open. Her mother stood in the front room with Mac. For the first time that Nix had seen, she wasn't wearing her head wrap. Her head looked absurdly small with so little hair. Mrs. Wack cast a surly look at Nix. "Ask your daughter,"